All right, your Most High, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Let us begin by thanking our sponsors. I thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Av, Max and Brenda Lapkovsky, in honor of the upcoming Bar Mitzvah of their son Yitzchak Meir, Dr. Riva Mitzner, in commemoration of the first Yahrzeit of her father, Dr. Larry Schenk, Aryeh Ben Chaim, Jack Bennett, in honor and in memory of Sergeant Omer Taviv, who was killed by a Hamas anti-tank missile on the Gaza border on May 12th, 2021. We thank our Day of Learning sponsors, Alan and Sherry Steinmetz, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Alan's grandfather, Mr. Sam Steinmetz, Reb Shimon Ben Yitzchak Isaac Zichron Livracha. And we thank our Daf Yomi sponsors for this morning, Dr. and Mrs. Lussman, in observance of the seventh Yahrzeit of Anna Lussman, Hannah Rachel Bas Avram Alter. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamas will have an aliyah and the families a nechama. And we'll say with that, let us begin. We have a really exciting daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Chaf Gimel 23, and we are picking up Emir Tz Hashem on Chaf Beis Amud Beis 22b at the Mishnah. I just want to also just mention, I know, yes, it is good, better. So I've learned to read Sammy's facial expressions when it comes to the microphone. I think I could tell when I'm not quite broadcasting correctly. I'm gonna have to put a piece of tape down to see exactly where it's supposed to go. In any event, so I just want to point out, we'll come back to it again, but we ended up yesterday. I felt a little bit of charot, a little bit of remorse that I was running out of time yesterday when we got to the last sugya in yesterday's daf, which of course was the sugya of making thick schach and therefore being unable to go ahead and see the stars. So again, I showed you the Shulchan Aruch. We went through that in the Shulchan Aruch together. I'll just point out there's more on that sugya. There is more on that sugya. And Meretz Hashem will have to find the time to come back and to do it together. But with that, let's begin the Mishnah. So Mishnah Chaf Beis on the Beis 22b on the bottom. So the Mishnah says as follows. Ha'oseh sukasa barosha agala. If a person goes in and makes his sukkah on the top of a wagon or on the top of a boat, this is not a metaphor, this is literal. A person is going out and making their sukkah on these particular places. Now, what I want to point out is something very interesting. So, Rosh Hagala, again, the visual is very simple. What's the visual? I think I sent out pictures, right, yesterday. There's only two pictures in today's daf. And the truth is, they're not especially helpful. And they're not even on this yet. But this, you could use your own powers of imagination to imagine what it looks like to build a sukkah on a wagon. And again, remember, where are you building the sukkah? On the flat part of the wagon. Now, here's what's interesting. The Lashon of the Mishnah is Barosh HaSvina. Now, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, right, Rashi says over here, Ha'oseh Sukasa Barosh HaGala, Afa Gav Dimataltal of Elokavia. Now, both say, now what's the chiddush of saying that you could build your sukkah on the top of the wagon? Because it's movable, right? In other words, both say, if you remember, if you notice, we've seen something very interesting. Perhaps the most interesting dialectic of sukkah is this back and forth, this tug of war between diras keva, diras arai, right? On one hand, sukkah is clearly arai, right? It is a temporary dwelling. But on the other hand, there also are elements of it that are supposed to be keva, that are supposed to be fixed. So what Rashi's pointing out over here is, obviously, when you're building something on top of a wagon, it's metaltala, it's movable. Look at the next Rashi, Barosh HaSvina. Rashi says, Shumokom gavoa shal sina, v'hayam gavoa maod, v'ein harim akif and v'aruach sholet esham v'okarta. Now, what's interesting? Rashi says Rosh HaSvina doesn't just mean on a boat, but rather it means on the top of a boat. So if you could imagine, again, you have a boat with multiple levels, you're building the sukkah on the top of the boat. Now, what's the chiddush over there according to Rashi? The chiddush is, there are no natural barriers to protect the sukkah from wind. So this is a wind-exposed sukkah. So again, we'll discuss this more in the Gemara. So there's two elements over here. Number one, you're building the sukkah in a way in which it is non-fixed and non-stationary, right? It's moving. That's Aleph. And Beis, at least in the case of the boat, you're building it in a way where it is more clearly exposed to the elements. But the Mishnah says, Ksheira, Ultimately, again, in both of these cases, the sukkah is kosher. And Rashi says over here, why? Didiras arai sagiba. Because again, sukkah is a diras arai, temporary dwelling. Therefore, this is good enough. Va'olin la biyamtiv. And you're permitted to go ahead and access this sukkah on yamtiv. Now, both say, that's not a chiddush. The only reason the Mishnah is adding in this line is because of the next set of cases. Watch this. The Gemara says, Barosha ilan al gabi gama. What happens if you made your sukkah in a tree? Made your sukkah in a tree. Now we'll discuss, there are various iterations of that case, but you made your sukkah in a tree, al gabi gama, or you made your sukkah on top of a camel. You literally put your sukkah on top of a camel. Kshera, once again, the sukkah is kosher. I'll say, take a look at Rashi just in a moment. Barosha ilan, tikein moshava barosha va'osa shamechitzas uschach. Kshera. Listen to this. If you go and you make your sukkah on a tree, or you make your sukkah on the top of a camel, the sukkah is kosher. However, there is a caveat. However, ve'ein olin la biyamtiv. But I will say there's only one problem, which is you can't access the sukkah on yamtiv. You can't access the sukkah on yamtiv. Now, I will say, now, why not? Because you're not permitted to go ahead and get on top of an animal on yamtiv, right? You're not permitted to ride an animal on yamtiv, or even not ride, you're not permitted to mount an animal on yamtiv, and you're not permitted to climb a tree on yamtiv. Now, interestingly enough, it's the same gezeira, right? You can't climb a tree. Why? Lest you come to break off a branch. You can't mount an animal. Why? Lest you come to break off a branch in order to go ahead and hit the animal for it to move. And even though, again, in this case, you don't want the animal to move, the sukkah is there, nevertheless, it's a rabbinic prohibition. It's a gzera. So halacha lemaisa, interestingly enough, in both of these cases, where you make the sukkah on top of the camel, you make it in the tree, the sukkah is going to be kosher. You just can't use it on yantiv. Interesting. So you have a totally kosher sukkah, just not usable on yantiv, but on chalamayid, it's going to be a great conversation piece, right? Chalamai, you can have your friends over. It's going to be fantastic. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says there is something very interesting. Kshira. Rashi says, L'cholo shamoid, v'yaf biyamtiv im avar va'ala lo yate dechavasa. Rashi just points out over here, by the way, you're not supposed to go into the sukkah on yamtiv. But if you did, you're yotze. Say the mitzvah. Now, we'll say that's an interesting statement, and we'll discuss what that means. So Rashi's saying is like this. Let's say you did go into your camel sukkah or your treehouse sukkah on Yom Tov, and you said, Leshev Basukkah, have you made a bracha levatala? So, right, it seems to be, according to Rashi, the answer would be no. No, you shouldn't have done it. You shouldn't have gone in. But once you went in, you are yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. So just something, we'll see the halacha also. So the Gemara goes right there. The Gemara says, Shtayim bi'ilan va'achos bi'di adam. So now we're going to get into a couple of different variations regarding the tree sukkahs. So let's say you have a sukkah, right, where two walls are held up by the tree. Now we'll say, now when it says Shtayim bi'ilan, it can be understood in one of two ways. Either two walls of the sukkah are fashioned from the tree, or the simpler case could also be two walls of the sukkah are held up by the tree. In other words, that the tree is an indispensable part of two walls of the sukkah. All right, shtayim bi'ilan va'achas bi'di adam, and one wall is called man-made. O shtayim bi'di adam va'achas bi'ilan, or two of them. We'll say these pictures, by the way, are in yesterday's daf. You could look at the PDF from yesterday's daf. They're there, but again, it's pretty simple to visualize. O shtayim bi'di adam va'achas bi'ilan. Or two of the walls are man-made walls, and only one of them is dependent on the sukkah. Kshera. Ultimately, again, the sukkah is going to be kasher. Ve'ein olin la biyamtiv. You just can't use it on yamtiv. So we'll say, so what the Mishnah is highlighting over here is as follows. The fact that the sukkah is kasher, we're to learn that beforehand. What the Mishnah is adding in on over here is, any time that the ikker sukkah is reliant on the tree, you cannot access it on yamtiv. Because that is considered to be hishtamshus bi'ilon. That is considered to be usage of the tree, which of course is going to be prohibited midrabanon on Shabbos and Yom Tov. However, shalosh bi'di adam va'achos bi'ilon. But it's very interesting. Let's say you have three walls of the sukkah that are man-made, and a fourth wall which leans or is dependent on the tree. So we'll say, just the image you have here, if you can imagine, you have a sukkah that's perched in a tree, but you have three long walls that extend down to the ground. So therefore, three walls of the sukkah are not reliant on the tree. They're not reliant on the tree. In other words, they're just long walls. A fourth wall is dependent on the tree. So we'll say, what's the difference between that case and the previous cases? Essentially here, you have a kasher sukkah, what? Independent of the tree. So in that case, ksheira, the sukkah is kasher, va'olin la b'yamtiv. And you can even access it on yamtiv. Top of Chaf Gimel, here the Mishnah says that zeh haklal, this is the rule, kol shenital ha'ilon, v'yichola la'amol b'fnei atzma, anytime you have a sukkah, and the tree were to be removed, but the sukkah could still stand on its own, ksheira, va'olin la b'yamtiv. It's kasher, and halacha lemaisa, you could go into it on yamtiv. So we'll say a very simple klal, a very logical klal. Essentially, even if the sukkah is in the tree, but the sukkah doesn't need the tree, then essentially halachically we view the tree as if it is not there. And therefore you could access that sukkah on yamtiv. But anytime that, you know, we'll say, I want to be clear, how do you access the sukkah on yamtiv? How? Right, Allah. It doesn't, however you want to do it, you just can't use the tree. Right? You just can't use the tree. That's what it means when you access it on yamtiv. But however, if the sukkah itself is dependent on the tree, or the tree ultimately supports the sukkah in some halachically critical way, then halacha l'maisa, the sukkah cannot be accessed on Shabbos or yamtiv. Beautiful. So also says the Gemara, Mani Mas Nisan, whose opinion is reflected in the Mishnah? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, it's Rabbi Akiva, this is a great case. Tisanya, ha'oses sukasa b'rosh ha'svina, if a person goes ahead and makes a sukkah on the top of the boat, now remember again, I just want to mention again, Rashi pointed this out, the Mishnah doesn't say somebody makes their sukkah b'svina on a boat. It's dafka saying, b'rosh ha'svina, the imagery is on the highest part of the boat, where the boat itself, the sukkah itself, is exposed to all of the elements, and there is nothing to shield the sukkah. So what's the halacha? Rabbi Gamliel posel. Rabbi Gamliel says that halacha l'maisa, the sukkah is posel. But Rabbi Akiva machshir. Rabbi Akiva ever says that no, the sukkah will still be kasher. But it's a great story, listen to this. Ma'aseh Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, shaybay mesina. So Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva once traveling by boat, and it was sukkahs. Amud Rabbi Akiva, va'asa sukkah b'rosh ha'svina. So Rabbi Akiva, kidarko, made a sukkah on the top of the boat. L'machar nashba ruach va'akarta. What happened? The next morning he woke up, and what happened? The wind had swept away the sukkah. This is great. Amud Rabbi Gamliel, Akiva, heichan sukascha. So we'll say, it's like Talmudic trash talk over here, right? So he goes, hey, Akiva, how's that sukkah doing, right? Right? What happened? What happened? It's so funny. Where's your sukkah? Where did that sukkah go? So I'll say, so again, so obviously Rabbi Gamliel telling Rabbi Akiva, you understand why you're, now do you understand why you're wrong? So I'll say, so again, that's the story. That's the end of the story. So I'll say, the story just illustrates their respective shitas. That Rabbi Akiva holds that Allah Chalamai say, you can go ahead and make a sukkah on the boat. Rabbi Gamliel holds that you can't. So the Mishnah, which obviously reflects the view that it is permitted to make a sukkah on Barosh HaSvina, reflects the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Some Rabbi says, "Dikuli alma hecha de'emi achol alama b'rech mitzuya di'abasha lo klumah." So we'll say, now we're going to analyze this. In the Shita, now obviously Rabbi Gamliel holds in general, well, let's see. Abai comes to qualify the machlokas, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva. So listen to this. Abai says as follows. Everyone agrees in the following case. Hecha de'eina yechola la'ama beruach mitzuya de'abasha lo klumu. We'll say a sukkah has to be able to withstand what we call a ruach mitzuya. Ruach mitzuya means a common everyday wind. Now, we'll say what the Gemara is focusing on is the following idea. Ruach mitzuya de'abasha is different than ruach mitzuya de'yam. Right, a regular everyday wind on land is going to be different than everyday wind on the ocean, or on the sea, on water. So Rabbi is like this. Everyone agrees that if your sukkah cannot withstand a ruach mitzuya of the abasha, a regular everyday wind on land, the sukkah is not kosher. Sukkah is not kosher. Okay, lo klamu. Yichol alamo b'she'ina mitzuya di abasha, kuli amalo pligi di ksheira. Certainly, if a sukkah is so strong that it can go ahead and withstand what? A ruach she'eno mitsuya, right? Which is, we will say, a stronger wind of the abasha, of land. Everyone agrees the sukkah is kasher. In other words, that's a seriously durable sukkah that has the ability to go ahead and withstand a ruach she'eno mitsuya, an uncommon wind of the abasha, right? Ki pligi, so we'll say, where does the machlokis come up? This is really very interesting. Ki pligi, b'diyachola la'amod beruach mitsuya diabasha, ve'ena yachola la'amod, and I will say here, the Hagos Fitzhugh changes this to ruach mitsuya diyan. So we'll say, here's the machlokis case between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel. What happens if a sukkah is strong enough to withstand a ruach mitsuya of the land, so a common everyday wind of the land, but is not strong enough to withstand a ruach mitsuya diyam, right? A strong wind of the sea. That's the machlokes. Rabbi Gamliel savar, sukkah diras kava ba'inan. Rabbi Gamliel says, a sukkah, see what's here's what's interesting. Rabbi Gamliel holds that a sukkah has to go ahead and be a diras kava. Now I will say, diras keva in this model means, v'chivan deni yichol lamod, beruach mutsuya diyam, lo klumhi. Rabbi Gamliel will say, a sukkah has to be a diras keva. Then I will say, now, that's not literally a diras keva, because remember, everyone's agreeing, what's the roof of your sukkah going to be? Right? Schach, which by definition is highly impermanent. Rabbi Gamliel means, his definition of keva means, that wherever your sukkah is situated, it has to be able to withstand a ruach mitsuya. So if it's situated on land, it's a ruach mitsuya of the land. If it's situated at sea, it's a ruach mitsuya of the sea. Of the sea. And therefore, again, according to Rabbi Gamliel, if you go ahead and you could build a sukkah on a boat. So you will say, here's what's interesting. Because when you read the Braisa before, we assume that Rabbi Gamliel just straight out passels the ruach mitsuya of a boat. But it turns out that's not the case. I should say it differently, that Rabbi Gamliel passels a sukkah on a boat. It turns out Rabbi Gamliel doesn't passel a sukkah on a boat. He just requires that what? If you build it on the boat, it has to be able to withstand the ruach mitsuya of the sea. Rabbi Akiva sav, Rabbi Akiva on the other hand holds, no, sukkah diras arai. Sukkah is just a temporary dwelling. But you know, the cheivan diyachol la'amo b'ruach mitsuya diyabasha k'sheira. And as long as the sukkah is able to withstand a normative wind on land, which is the normal common place to go ahead and build the sukkah, that is going to be enough. So we'll say a really fundamental machlokes. So the real fundamental machlokes is sukkah diras keva or is sukkah diras arai? Now for the first time, we actually understand what that machlokes is. If you hold that sukkah is a diras keva, a more permanent structure, like Rabbi Gamliel, what that means is wherever you build your sukkah must be able to withstand a ruach mitsuya. That's the definition of diras keva on a most basic level. You're building it on the land, right? Ruach mitsuya on the land. You're building it at sea, ruach mitsuya at sea. Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's diras arai. So what does diras arai mean? Diras arai means that it has to be able to withstand a ruach mitsuya where? Land. And I will say, here's what's fascinating about this. So according to Rabbi Akiva, though, you can build a sukkah on the boat, even though you know what? That chances are it's not going to stand. The Rabbi says it's a pretty incredible thing. Why? Because since it could stand on land, that's enough. You know, I will say, it's an interesting, if you think about this, even from like a hashkafic perspective, it's an interesting idea about almost like in human resiliency, what they're arguing about, right? In other words, that how strong is a person expected to be in life? How strong am I supposed to be in life? So Rabbi Gamliel says, look, there are winds and there are forces that act against us all of the time. So whether you're bayam or you are bayabasha, in life you have to be strong enough to always counter the ruach mitsuya. There's always going to be a ruach mitsuya wherever you are. No matter what you want to accomplish in life, there are always going to be forces that are acting against you. Those are the ruach mitsuyos in life. And you have to be strong enough wherever you are to stand up to those ruach mitsuyos. Rabbi Akiva says, most of us are not that strong. Most of us could go ahead and stand up to the ruach mitsuya of the Abasha, but they can't stand up to the Ruach Metsuya of the sea. And Rabbi Akiva says, that's okay. That's okay, because no person could be strong enough to be able to withstand all circumstances. You just have to be strong enough to be able to withstand normative circumstances. An incredible yisod, but the common denominator, at least hashkafically between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva, is in life, there's always a Ruach Metsuya. And I will say, sometimes we have this idea, we have this expectation, and it's I think, one of the most fatal expectations in life, that life is supposed to be serene, smooth sailing. That everything is supposed to go okay, and especially if I'm doing the right thing, everything is supposed to fall into place, everything is supposed to be fine, and when I encounter resistance, somehow it's like, what's wrong? What's going on over here? And it creates such a profoundly false expectation in life. It's important to remember, there's always a Ruach Metsuya. There's always a Ruach Metsuya in life. The Shaila just is how strong the Ruach Metsuya is. There's always resistance. There's always challenge. There's always difficulty. There's always adversity. On the Yam it looks one way. On the Abash it looks a different way. So when you encounter friction in life, don't look at it as that you're doing something wrong, but recognize that is the normative Derech HaChaim. So a machlokis is not just in Sukkah, but a machlokis in how strong do we have to be as individuals. Rabbi Gamliel is one model, Rabbi Akiva is another model. Also makes sense that it's Rabbi Akiva's model that in life you only have to withstand a Ruach Metsuya Diabash, right? Because Rabbi Akiva is always one of being Malamed Tzchus on everyone for everything. Incredible Yisod. In any event, the Gemara goes weiter. Oh, Gabi Gamos. We'll say that's the Sina case. What about on the camel? So Masnisin money. We'll say whose opinion does the Mishnah reflect? Rabbi Meir he. Desanya ha'osas sukasa Gabi Behema. But see, these are great cases. So what happens? A person makes a sukkah on top of an animal. Rabbi Meir, machshir, Rabbi Huda posel. Right? Rabbi Meir says that it's kosher. I'm sorry. How is it kosher? Rabbi Meir, machshir. If you make your sukkah on the back of an animal, Rabbi Meir says it's kosher, and Rabbi Huda says that it's posel. My time to read. I was saying, obviously, the Gemara understands that the discussion, even though the Mishnah, lumps, sukkah on Svina and on Behema as one, obviously then it's not the same issues, right? The Svina is one of Ruach, is one of wind. Obviously the Behema both say that's not the case. So what's the problem with the Behema? So both say, so again, we now have a Braisa. In the Braisa, Rabbi Meir says, sukkah agabe gamal, a sukkah on top of your camel is going to be kosher. Rabbi Huda says it's possible. My time is Rabbi Huda. Why does Rabbi Huda say that it's possible? Amarkra. Chag Sukkos Tasa Lecha Shivas Yomim. Because we both say the pasuk says that what? The Yom Tov of Sukkos you have to make for you, right? Or I should say, Yom Tov of Sukkos you have to make for yourself 7 days. What does Rabbi Huda darshan from this? Sukkah Haru'uya L'Shiva Shma Sukkah. A sukkah that is fit for dwelling for 7 days is a sukkah. She'en Haru'uya L'Shiva Lo Shma Sukkah. And therefore, a sukkah that's not fit for 7 days is not a sukkah. The Rebbe says the sukkah built on top of the camel fit for 7 days. The answer is it's at most fit for six, right? Because remember again, assuming that the first day of Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos, right? So they only have one. It's only one day Yom Tov, right? So again, at most it's fit for six. So you don't have a sukkah haru'uya l'shiva. Look at Rashi haru'uya l'shiva. The hashta de gazer abanan ein olin lo nimtzeis she'en aruya liyom rishon. The Rebbe will say again, halach lamaisa. So Rashi's not even counting Shabbos over here. But again, once Chazal said you can't go and go on an animal on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can't even use your sukkah on the first day of Yom Tov. So we'll say, understand, the Gemara is presupposing a number of different things. Number one, that Shabbos and Yom Tov are falling out on the same day. Number two, that there's only one day of Yom Tov. And number three, that no one sits in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Right, they just want to point out all that. No, because remember again, the fact that we sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres is a function of Sfeika Diyoma, it's a function of Gavos, second day Yom Tov, right? So the Gemara is presupposing none of that exists at the time that the Gemara is having this discussion, which is really quite fascinating. And in any event, we'll say, isn't this an incredible yisod that you have to build a sukkah haru'uya l'shiva? A sukkah, we'll say, think about this for just a moment, because, you know, meaning in general, Rabbi Huda holds Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold that sukkah's diras keva. But just think about this in just a moment. If you go with the idea that sukkah's diras arai, a temporary dwelling, the temporary dwelling has to be fit for 7 days. Which I will say also is an incredible yisod if you think about it in life. That a person, however, we'll come back to it. I'll just plant this seed. You know, we often in life get into this tug of war between planning for the future and maximizing the present. And there is a constant tug of war. So it's interesting that Rabbi Huda is saying that when building your diras arai in life, when building your temporary dwelling, you could think ahead a little bit. How much do you have to think ahead? 7 days. 7 days. Don't get caught up in too much future planning, because you run the risk of fundamentally cheapening your present existence. To engage in no level of future planning, of course, is short-sighted. But again, you want to build your diras arai, you want to build your temporary dwellings, your present dwellings, ru'uya l'shiva. Think 7 days ahead. A little bit ahead is good. Too much ahead, maybe an exercise in futility. Not ahead at all is simply short-sighted. So we'll say that cheetahs Rabbi Huda. So the Gemara said Rabbi Meir. So again, we've got Rabbi Huda says that if you build your sukkah on top of the camel, it is possible. Why? Because according to Rabbi Huda, the sukkah must be re'uya l'shiva. You need it to work for all 7 days, and obviously in this case, if it's on animal, it doesn't. So Rabbi Meir says it's kosher. Rabbi Meir, what does Rabbi Meir do with this? The drusha is a good drusha that you need a sukkah. Well, like, even without the drusha, it seems to be intuitive that in order for your sukkah to be kosher, it has to be able to service you when? We'll say, the truth is, I would even make the argument, even if it doesn't service you 7 days, it's got to at least service you when? The first day. The first day is the da'oraisa. So how can you have a sukkah? We'll say, remember again, you're building this great sukkah on top of the camel. The only thing is, just can't use it the first day yondu. Oh, and by the way, the only time there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to sit in the sukkah is when? The first day yomtiv. So it's very intuitive. How can you build a sukkah that halacha lemaisa you can't use when there is a mitzvah d'oraisa? Rav Meir, hanami mid'oraisa mechsechazia. So what's Rav Meir gives an interesting answer. Rav Meir says, the truth is, let's just remember, this sukkah is kasher or shiva, right? Mid'oraisa, the sukkah is absolutely fine. There's a rabbinic gzeira that prevents you from using it ultimately again one of the days. But Lamaisa Rabbi Meir says, you can't tell me the sukkah is pasul because midda oraisa, it's absolutely fit. V'rabbanan hu de gazruba. And the Rabbanan ultimately again are the ones who stepped in and made a gzeira. So again, we will say Rabbi Meir might tell you practically this is not the best way to make a sukkah. But Lamaisa, if this is what you did, it's still a sukkah kshera. Even though Rabbi Meir will agree that what? You can't use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov, but it's still considered to be a sukkah haru'uya l'shiva, because mid'oraisa is ru'uya l'shiva, it's just mid'rabban and you can't use it. But so listen to this next case. Now, these are all related cases. Asu asa l'behema dofen l'sukkah. What happens if you made an animal, you used an animal as a wall for the sukkah? So we'll say, once again, not a metaphor, just quite literal. You're just putting an animal by a wall of the sukkah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir pos Rabbi Huda machshir. Rabbi Meir says, it's pasul. Rabbi Huda says, it's kasher. Rabbi Meir omer, kol davar sheyesh bo ruach chayim, ein osin osin. Because Rabbi Meir holds in general, you cannot use a living thing for the following purposes. Ein osin oso, lo dofen l'sukkah. You cannot use something that is living as a wall for the sukkah. V'lo lechi l'mavui. You can't go ahead and make it as a lechi for a mavui. Right? I guess if you can imagine, let's say you have a snake or something, right? And you extend it as your lechi for the mavui. That would be your korah, right? You can't put an animal as your lechi or your korah, right? V'lo pasi l'biraus. So most remember again, pasi biraus, we've had this a number of times. That is the diumadin, the perpendicular posts, right, that are situated around the well, right? Remember again, very quickly, well is Rishus HaYachid. You need to draw water. Bepashto, so well is situated in Rishus HaRabim. How do you draw water? So Chazal relaxed the standards for enclosures for the purposes of getting water on Shabbos, and they allowed you to put up these perpendicular one amma by one amma posts situated in all four corners, called diyumada, and that's considered to be an enclosure. So you can't use animals or anything that has life for the diyu madin. Below gola le kever, nor can you use something that is living as a grave cover. Rabbi Yosi Aglili amru af in kosher alav gitei noshim. And Rabbi Yosi Aglili adds in over here, by the way, you also can't write a get, right? A divorce document on anything that is alive. So my time with Rabbi Meir, what's Rabbi Meir's logic? So we'll say, so again, now Rabbi Meir precludes the use of an animal or any living thing for all of these purposes, but let's focus on sukkah right now. So Rabbi Meir says, you can't use an animal as a dofen for your sukkah, as well for your sukkah. What's the reason? Amr Abaye, so I'm sorry, my time with Rabbi Meir, Abaye Amar, Shema Tamos. It's a very simple issue. Rabbi Meir is afraid that the animal may die. Now look at Rashi, Shema Tamos, Rashi says, Habehima Biyamtiv, V'tipol, V'in Kan Dofen, V'nim Tzabatel, M'mitzah Sukkah. So we'll say, listen to this. So the Gemara says, very simple. Rabbi Meir says, I don't conceptually have a problem with using something that is alive to function as a wall. The problem is if it dies, both say the assumption is if it dies, B'pashtos, it's not going to be standing anymore as a wall, and you've lost your wall. You've lost your wall, and if you lose your wall, you no longer have your Sukkah. Very simple. Rabbi Zeira Amar, Shema Tivrach. Rabbi Zeira says, I agree, Rabbi Meir, that you also can't use a living animal as a wall, but for a different reason. Why? Maybe it'll run away. So we'll say, what's the nafkamina? Listen to this. This is great. Bepil kasher. We'll say, let's say you have an elephant that is tied down, right? A tied down elephant. So the Gemara says, Bepil kasher. Everyone agrees that that should be fine for sukkah, right? The Gemara says, and by the way, if you do that, you do not need any decorations. By the way, that's no plastic fruit for you that year. You are good. So the Gemara says, also, peel kasher, koli amalo pligi, di inami mayis yesh b'nevela so yud. So I'll say, this is great. See, if you're using an elephant, a tied down elephant for one of your walls, everyone agrees your sukkah is kasher. Why? Because we'll say, what's the worst case scenario? If the elephant dies, it still has the requisite height. See, I was saying, by other animals, if it dies, the concern is if it keels over, right? Well, if it dies and it keels over, you're not going to have the requisite height of your sukkah. With an elephant, apparently, even if it dies, you'll still have the requisite, you could use its carcass as a wall, and ultimately it still has the requisite height. Keepli, you see where this machlokes come up? Bepil she'eno kasher. Ultimately, again, with an unanchored elephant. So according to the opinion who says that the reason you can't use an animal as well for the sukkah is because maybe it'll die. So that's not really a concern over here. Why? Because even if it dies, you still have the requisite height of the carcass. But according to the opinion who says that we are concerned lest the animal run away, ultimately, again, there is a concern because the elephant could still run away. But I just want to point out that these cases sound ridiculous to us. But if you think about this, from the perspective of a shepherding perspective, again, I don't know if people are shepherding elephants, but Lamaisa, think of this for just a moment, you're shepherding, you're in the field, the ability to use livestock to create a sukkah, could actually be very beneficial. Just pointing it out, I don't know that it's as far-fetched as it sounds to us. In any event, the Gemara says, L'man damar gzeru shema tamos, nechu shema tivrach. So also, but according to the opinion who's concerned that the animal might die, doesn't he also have the concern that the animal may run away? In other words, they're not mutually exclusive concerns. Ela bepil she'eno kasher kuli amalo pligi. Rather, we'll say everyone agrees that if you're using an elephant that is not tied down, that the elephant is not kasher for a mechitza because it can run away. Ki pligi bebehema kshura. Rather, we'll say the issue is with another animal, not an elephant, that is tied down and you want to use as the wall for your sukkah. Lemantam or gzer shematamos cheshinan. So let's say if you have another animal that's tied down, so according to the opinion, you have to be concerned the animal may die. That's a concern, because if the animal dies, bless you, falls over, you no longer have the requisite height for your wall. But according to the opinion, it says that you have to be concerned the animal may run away. Obviously, if the animal is tied down, there is no concern of running away. We'll say first, white line at the bottom. But according to the opinion, who's concerned that the animal may run away, is he also not concerned that the animal may die? To which the Gemara says, Misa lo shchicha. We'll say, it's such a fascinating statement. Death is not common. which is quite a fascinating statement. They will say, what does it mean? Death is not common. Death is actually pretty common, right? It's pretty common. So we'll say, so what's the pshat? What's the pshat? So what that means, mislo shchicha, is we're not choshesh that something is going to die. Again, we'll see this concept in just a little bit. But in general, essentially what we say is in life, something that is alive has a cheskas chayim, has a chazaka of being alive. And that chazaka of being alive is there until when? Until it's dead. Right? That's the way it works. That seems the misa lo chayshina. So we'll say, listen to this. We'll come back to that. The Gemara asks another question. If you're using an animal as a wall, don't we have another problem? So we'll say, we've taken care of the problem of Shema Tivrach. Right? How do you take care of Shema Tivrach? Maybe it'll run away. How do you take care of that? Tie it down. We've taken care of Shema Tamos. How do you take care of that? We're not choshesh for misa. Here's another issue. Vayikra Ravcha de Beini Beini. We'll say, what about the space by the animal's legs? In other words, an animal, right? The animal has a body, and then it has legs, right? And we'll say you have this entire open area underneath the animal. Now, you can't say lavud, right? Why can't you say lavud? Right? Because at the end of the day, it's more than three tefachim. Again, unless you're using an animal that is very low to the ground. But you have this entire open space on the bottom of your wall. What do you do with that? The Gemara says, no problem. Da'avid le behutz of a dafna. You make a little wall. You make a little wall out of palm branches, right? By the legs of... First of all, at this point, just get a tarp. Just get a tarp, right? Ridiculous. Some people do to save money. Right? They'll say, so again, here's what's just interesting over here. So you're tying your poor animal. You're tying... This is not a PETA-friendly daf, by the way. I just want to find that. So I'll say, so you're going ahead, you're tying down the animal, and you're putting essentially a wall made out of palm fronds by the feet of the animal as well. The Gemara says, the Dilma Rava, so maybe the animal's going to crouch. I was going to say, don't you have a concern about the animal crouching down? And if the animal crouches down, then what? First of all, it'll crush the wall. And then when it gets back up, you no longer have a wall. This is great. The Mesicha Ba'ashli Mela'el. No, you're holding the animal up with cords from above. So I'll say, this is a whole stage production now, right? This is like Mamasha. Again, I'll say, you understand, whenever the Gemara does this, this obviously, no one's doing this. No one's doing this. The Gemara is just trying to construct a case in which you could potentially use an animal as a wall. Doing it like this is ridiculous. But Lamaisa, all the Gemara is trying to highlight is there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it. I'll say, you know, sometimes the halachic process shows you something can be done, even though we know it's not going to be done. Oh, well, once you're talking about holding up animals with cords from above, that should obviate the concern that the animal may die as well. Because what was the whole concern with Shema Tamos, the animal may die, is that it crumples over and no longer have the requisite height. Well, if the animal is being held up with cords from above, then Lamaise, even if the animal does die, it's not going to crumple over. It's being held up. Does that not help? To which the Gemara says, listen to this. Zimnin demokim bepachos mishlosha l'samoch l'schach. Because also I'll tell you why. Sometimes when you're using an animal as a dofin, as a wall, the way you do it is as follows. You know the halacha of lavud, and lavud says that what? Lavud says that as long as your animal wall is within three tefachim of your schach, you're good to go. That's fine. But what could happen, right? What could happen? The chevan amud beis. The chevan demaisa kavtsa v'lavadayde. What's the concern? The concern about say is as follows. You set up your animal wall again, I'll say, with all of the different things. Remember, again, this is a complicated thing. First of all, you're tying the animal down. Second of all, you're anchoring it with cords from above to hold it up. Third of all, you're making a little wall by the feet. Now, in addition to all of that, by the way, you're also using lavud, right? And that's why, again, the animal reaches within three tefachim of the schach itself. So what's the concern? The concern is like this. When the animal dies, even though the cords are holding it up, we'll say what happens. By definition, the animal dies. It, I don't know what the technical term is. It collapses. So again, the cords are holding it up, but there is some level of collapse that's occurred. Therefore, if you were relying on lavud to connect the top of the animal to the schach, let's say it was within the three tefachim mark, when that animal collapses down, even though it's being held up, it may be more than three tefachim away from the schach. If it's more than three tefachim away from the schach, then what? The dofen no longer connects with the schach. If the dofen doesn't connect with the schach, then you don't have a kasher sukkah. But because we may be dealing with such a small, almost indiscernible amount, you may not even recognize that that in fact occurred and may be sitting in a sukkah that is pasul, but you actually think that it's kosher. Okay, so it says, so that's all the ways you can go to make this sukkah kosher. The Gemara just says, by the way, Umi Amar Abaye, Rabbi Meir Chayish Lemisa, Rabbi Huda Lo Chayish Lemisa. So we'll say, let's go back for just a moment. Because remember, again, part of this machlokes hinged on this, are we choshesh for Misa or not? Right? Do we have to be concerned about death or not? So the Gemara says, did Rabbi Meir is the one who is concerned for death, and Rabbi Huda is not? Both say, listen to this case. Vatana, we learned. Bas Yisrael, Shanisa is the Kohen. Kohanic family, she has married her husband who is a Kohen. Now remember again, one of the perks of marrying a Kohen is you get to eat Truma. You get to eat Truma. So here's the case. Woman, Bas Yisrael, marries a Kohen. V'halach baila l'medinas hayam. And what happened? Her husband went overseas. So what's talacha? Ochelas betruma becheska shukayim. Now, both say, here's the interesting shayla. Her husband went overseas. I should say, well, look, I don't know. How does she know her husband's alive? How does she know her husband's alive? Now, both say, remember, her only license to eat truma is why? Because she's married to a kohen, which means the moment that her husband dies, or divorces her for that matter, she can no longer eat truma. So then her husband's gone overseas. Yet talacha is she's permitted to continue to eat the truma. But why? Don't we have to be concerned that her husband's dead? To which the Gemara says, no, b'cheska shukayim. We operate with a chazaka that the husband is still alive, and therefore she is permitted to go ahead and eat truma. Good. So we'll say, what do you see from that braisa, or from that mishnah? What do you see? That we're not choshesh from Isa, right? That a person has a cheskas chayim, and that chazaka of being alive remains with you until when? Until we know for sure that you're dead. So the Gemara says, v'raminan Allah. Now we contrast that with the following halacha. Let's listen to this case. Let's say a man says to his wife, and again, same case of a man, a Kohen married to a Bas Yisrael, and he says to her, this is your get 1 hour before I die. So he gives her a get with a retroactivity clause that says, right, this is your get 1 hour before I die. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, third line down from the top, Hareze Giteich, Yare Shem Shalo Yamos Pit Om Obi Iracheres. V'tizokek ishto lechalitza, v'nosin lo get kishubari, v'omer lo get zeyi legarsheich, sha'achas kode misasi. So we'll say in this case over here, where this case comes up is, a man, let's say, is traveling. A man is traveling, he's going to be away. And what happens? He doesn't want his wife to run into any type of yibum situation. Again, they may be happily married. They may be happily married. And Rashi says, he's totally bari, he's totally healthy. But he does not want her to have any chalitza situation. So he says to her, here's your get, and it'll be retroactively chal, retroactively valid, 1 hour before I die. So it turns out that when her husband dies, that triggers the retroactivity clause. It turns out that the get was valid an hour before the husband's death. And therefore, she's not an almana, she's not a widow. Rather, she is a grusha, and therefore not subject to yibum. So we'll say, what's the halacha in that case? Asura lecho b'truma miyad. She's not permitted to eat truma immediately. In other words, we'll say, why? What do we have to be concerned about? What does this bring? That he's going to die any moment. He's going to die any moment. And remember, again, when he dies, that triggers the get an hour earlier. So now the Gemara says she cannot eat truma anymore. So we'll say we have contradictory mishnayos, right? We have contradictory mishnayos. One mishnah seems to indicate that halacha lemaisa, if the Kohen husband goes overseas, she could continue to eat truma because there's a chazaka that he's alive. We're not choshesh for misa. Second braisa, this is your get 1 hour before my death. Already, again, as soon as he makes that clause, ultimately, she cannot eat truma, which tells us we are choshesh for misa. So what's going on over here? V'am rabbi lo kasha, ha rabbi meir de lo chayesh lemisa, ha rabbi Yehuda de chayesh lemisa. It's not a contradiction, right? Rabbi Meir, ultimately, again, one opinion, the second mishnah, reflects the view. I'm sorry. The first mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, who's not choshesh for misa. And the second one reflects Rabbi Hudo is choshesh to nisan. And I just want to point out, therein lies the contradiction, right? Because remember, we were quoting Rabbi Meir before us saying Rabbi Meir is choshesh from Isa and Rabbi Huda is not. And now we just said this is Rabbi Meir who is choshesh from Isa and Rabbi Huda is not. So that's, we have a steer now between the shitas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda. But one more piece, this sanya. Where do we see their respective shitas? Here we go. So we've seen this case many times throughout our journeys in Shas. Halokeach gani bein akusim. Bose, listen to this. I purchase wine from kusim. Now remember again, Bose, kusim, they come up all the time. They're everywhere. Right? Bose, so again, remember who are the kusim? They were resettled in Eretz Yisrael by Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur. They were non-Jewish. They were a nation of idolaters. There was an outbreak of lions in Eretz Yisrael. They converted. They were subsequently found to be worshipping idolatry. So there's a whole shaila about the nature of their conversion, right? So are kusim Jews? Are kusim not Jews? They were medaktek in certain things, not medaktek in other things. The point is, you buy wine from a kusi, you need to assume it's untithed, you need to retithe it. So watch this. Halokech ben akusim, you bought wine from kusim, and what? Omer, Nebosana, the issue of yours is as follows. You want to drink the wine. Look at Rashi. Well, actually, not yet. Right? You want to drink the wine, right? The problem just is, you don't have the ability to separate Trumas and Maestros right now from the wine. So what do you want to do? Halokech, Omer, Shnei Lugin Shani Asa Lahafish Harin Truma. The two lugin that I will ultimately separate, they should be truma. Asara maiserishin, another piece of maiserishin. Tisha maiserishini, 9 parts of maiserishini. Umechal vishose miad div Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says that halacha lemaisa, you can go ahead and drink immediately. Now what's going to happen? Later on, you'll separate everything out. Later on, so I could designate it now. I could designate it now. Separate it out later. And I will say, if you look at the last Rashi, not vishose miad, Bisamchinan Abrera, Ukeshiyabalabeso Yafish, Framina Yesh Berishelohein Masran Shumasan. So we'll say, so again, this of course gets into the Brera discussion as well. So a mayor says, I'm on the road and I need to drink wine. Who doesn't need to drink wine on the road? So we'll say, so again, so I'm dry, what I want, but I have to separate out Shumasamaisras. So I designate, and when I get home, I'll separate. And Brera says that it's become retroactively clarified that what I separate now when I get home is what I designated before when I was on the road. These words are Rabbi Meir, top of Chav Dal Rabbo say, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Osrin, B'yet Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, all Aser. Rabbo say, now what does this have to do with anything? Look at the top Rashi. Rashi says, Osrin, V'amrinon Shema Yibaka Hanod, V'lo Yavo Lide Brera. Rabbi say, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon all say you can't do this. What are they concerned about? This is not a machlok, it's about Brera. What are they concerned about? They're concerned that the barrel or the wineskin is going to break. And all the wine is gonna be destroyed. And what's going to happen? It turns out that you drank untithed wine. Because now before you get home and have the opportunity to separate out the trumas and maestros, the wine is already gone. Now both say, yeah, why is this concern for us? We are equating, the Gemara is equating the concern of Shema Yibaka Hanod, that the wineskin would break, is the same thing as Shema Tomos, right? That a person may die. It's the same thing. Are you essentially, I will say, are you choshesh for things going wrong in life? Right? So Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon hold that Allah, you have to be concerned that the wineskin of the barrel is going to break and before you get home, and therefore you will never actually have the opportunity to go ahead and separate out the trumas and maestros. So if you look at Rashi says, "Avir osrin v'aminan gezerah shem yibaka." No, they're concerned. Tap Rashi chav dalal med aleph. They're concerned maybe the wineskin is going to break. V'lo yavo lidei breira v'nimtza shoset tevalim. And it turns out they drank teva. Alma Rabbi Huda chayish lebikias anod v'choshekin lemisa. Rabbi Meir lo chayish. They probably say, what do you see from here? You see that halacha lemaisa, Rabbi Huda is the one who's concerned that the wineskin may break. By extension, he's the one who's concerned that people may die. By extension, he's the author of the brayso who says that as soon as the Kohen husband says to his wife, Harezei giteich, sha'achas kodem misasi, that she can no longer go ahead and eat truma. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, who says that you could do this arrangement with the wineskin, is the opinion who holds, we're not choshesh from Isa, we're not choshesh, the barrel is going to break, We're not choshesh that people will die. Kohen husband goes overseas. Wife could continue to go and eat truma because Rabbi Meir is not choshesh lemisa. So now we've established shitas Rabbi Huda Rabbi Meir. The only problem is the shitas Rabbi Huda Rabbi Meir, as we just espoused here, contradicted what Rabbi Huda Rabbi Meir said on Amud Aleph. Because here what we just established is that Rabbi Meir holds we are not choshesh for misa. Rabbi Huda holds we are choshesh for misa. On Amud Aleph we said Rabbi Meir holds that we are choshesh for misa, and Rabbi Huda holds that we're not choshesh for misa. To which the Gemara says, not a problem with this, will stop. Epoch, just switch the shitas around. Rabbi Meir chayesh lemisa, and Rabbi Huda lo chayesh lemisa. Just change it around, and really the shita should read that Rabbi Meir is the one who is choshesh from Isa, and Rabbi Huda is not. We'll stop over here for today, but I just want to point out we're stopping in the middle of that discussion. See, here's what we know. There is a machlokes chayshina lemisa or lo chayshina lemisa. That is a machlokes. Who holds what? Emir Hashem to be determined tomorrow. Shkoya.
Can we say that some of these the fundamentals of the